Please rise. The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Reyes, Judge Jessen, Judge Klopaki, the Honorable Peter M. Reyes Jr. presiding.
Good afternoon, counsel. You may be seated. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals via video conference. Today is Wednesday, November 20th, 2019. We have six cases on our calendar. Three are set for oral argument. This is the second case we have set for oral argument today. This case is case number A19-0677, in re the matter of the welfare of the children of BR and AV parents. Let me just confirm, first of all, counsel for appellant, if you are there, can you please verbally affirm?
John Mack for appellant.
Okay.
Can you hear me or see me?
Yes, we can hear you and see you. And counsel for respondent, are you there as well?
Yes, I am. Shane Baker, Canada County Attorney for respondent.
Okay, thank you very much. So, counsel for both parties, you'll have 15 minutes for your initial arguments, and counsel for appellant, as you know, you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal if you so choose. And with that, Mr. Mack, you may proceed. Please state your name for the record and the party you are representing.
John Mack for the father. Will it please the court, if you can turn to pages ADD 37 and ADD 58 in my appendix or addendum, you will note a contradiction on the part of the court. On ADD 37, it states, any and all parental rights of Deanna Roosevelt as mother and of Abel Villanueva as father to Christian Gage Villanueva, born given date, are involuntarily terminated. Then, if you look at page 58, it says, all right, motion denied, we're done. Now that was a motion to allow him to withdraw his agreement to termination of parental rights. You can't have both a voluntary termination and an involuntary termination. And it's not clear which is which. If you turn to page 80...
Well, except that after he did the voluntary termination, he wanted to withdraw that termination and that admission. Didn't the court go on then to make a involuntary determination?
It appears that that's what happened, but I'm not sure that you can have an involuntary termination after a voluntary termination unless you withdraw successfully the voluntary termination, and that didn't happen here.
You're saying that the admissions he made on the voluntary termination could not be used as evidence to support a involuntary termination?
I'm saying that no, it can't, because first, my point is that if you have a voluntary termination and the court decides that it may want an involuntary termination later, first, of course, it should withdraw the voluntary termination, but if it doesn't, it should at least apprise Mr. Villanueva that it is considering an involuntary termination and allow him to participate as a person who is subject to an involuntary termination, and it isn't. It's basic fairness. If I've already agreed that I will voluntarily terminate my rights because I don't want to have problems down the road, then the court should not essentially change its mind and stick him with the harsher penalty. If you take a look at page 80...
Well, but the change of mind here was on the part of your client.
No, my client asks to change his mind, and my client asks to have the voluntary termination expunged, but the court denies it, says no, and therefore the court has made a determination that the voluntary termination stands. Therefore, it can't be an involuntary termination later without further action of the court, and there is no such action. Now, if we take a look at page ADD 50, about two-thirds of the way down, the court says, so that day that you decided to punch Hector Osorio in the courtroom, you knew that when you did did that, that was going to be a deal breaker for the termination of parental rights case. So it sounds here, when the court is dealing with the motion to withdraw, that the court was, in fact, giving him an involuntary termination and not a voluntary termination. I don't see how the court can possibly do both of those things. Now, getting back
Well, let me ask you, are you saying that the record would not support the basis for an in or for a voluntary termination?
Are you saying that the record wouldn't support
would not support a voluntary termination?
I say that the record doesn't support a voluntary determination. Doesn't so support because basically what he is arguing is ineffective assistance of counsel. If you take a look at one and two of the reply brief, we get an indication that the appellant, Mr. Villanueva, didn't have the foggiest idea what he's doing. Page one and page two are a partial transcript of the voluntary termination. And he indicates, no, I'm not going to make the agreement. Not enough time to do anything about it. You know, now in the future, I've already told you I have no choice and there ain't no voluntary. I terminated my parental rights. I get the same effective termination. Basically, it indicates that Mr. Villanueva didn't have the foggiest idea what he was doing. So what the court should have done at the post-hearing hearing was say, okay, your voluntary termination is herewith expunged. We'll go to trial on the involuntary termination. And of course it didn't. That's what I'm assigning as my first assignment of error. Let's turn then briefly to involuntary termination. Two things about the involuntary termination. Of course, first, that my client wasn't a participant in the involuntary termination because it had already been a voluntary termination. But the sole question ought to be, in this case, I submit, whether or not his voluntary termination should have been expunged. Expunged isn't quite the right word, but I think you know what I'm talking about. The court, on the other hand, made a determination that it was not going to let him off the hook and expunge his voluntary termination because he assaulted someone in open court. Now, the court was very angry and gave him a 90-day sentence and probably should have. But the problem is, to make a determination of whether or not a parent's parental rights should be terminated, should be determined by the best interests of the child, not the activities of the parent in court. There are plenty of batterers in the world that are perfectly good parents, so that the court should not have made a determination based upon his assault in court as to whether he should have his parental rights terminated. The case against
Mr. Mack, if you can, I'm just trying to understand. So, what rule would you point us to which provides the district courts the ability to provide relief to your client from the termination, the TPR order? I mean, you talk about duress and coercion, but what rule or case should frame this?
If I am remembering correctly, Juvenile Rule 40, which is pretty much equivalent to Rule 6002 of the general rules, provides if a person makes a motion within 4 months for relief based upon those various factors, then and in that event, the court can grant relief. This case is a little bit similar. Obviously, it's not the same, but it's similar to the Finden sort of case where a person is trying to get relief from a judgment. And there are various reasons why a person can have relief from a judgment, and there's a four-factor test.
And we review that as for an abuse of discretion, right? Correct? I mean, if it's like Rule 60 and we're talking about the Findon factors, then we would be reviewing this for an abuse of discretion. You would agree with me about that, correct?
That's true. Except for the one Findon factor, if the court made an error of law, but that really relates to the first point that I was making and the contradiction between involuntary and voluntary. That's an error of law, and you'd review that de novo, but the facts before the judge would be reviewed for abuse of discretion.
So what different from the effect it has on your client? So what is why does it matter whether this is a voluntary or involuntary termination?
Big difference. If my client has another child in the future and it's a voluntary termination and somebody wants to terminate into the new child, they have to go through all the hoops. If, on the other hand, he's involuntarily terminated for reasons of palpable unfitness, then there is a presumption that he's unfit and the child can be taken away from the nursery. So it makes a big difference whether you're voluntarily terminated or involuntarily terminated.
One additional question. When I'm looking at finding 9 of the district court's order, I think it's on the addendum at page, so the page numbers are a little, page 20, I believe it is. So the district court says after the record closed that your client indicated that he wished to enter his admission to the petition. So it doesn't talk, it doesn't frame it as voluntary or involuntary, just that from my reading of that, just that he's admitting to what is set out in the petition for termination of parental rights. Am I reading that fairly?
Yes, you are. But it seems to me that what you're dealing with here is an attempt by him, and which I'm representing him on, to revoke that indication. The assault, I'm not very clear on the record when things happen, but it appears that the assault happens on March 5th, and that the court makes a determination at that point that he has voluntarily waived his rights and consents to the termination. And then the 6th is taken up with the consequences of his assault. So it seems to me that the trial, or most of it, took place without Mr. Venezuela, or if anything else, he was just in court.
But isn't it hard for us to judge a lot of what happened at the trial, given the fact that this really is not a transcript of the trial? So you're asking us to weigh in on the appropriateness of some things, which we don't have the transcript for, as far as whether he was involved in the trial itself or not, correct?
I think you can look at the dates, because as far as I can tell, the trial took place on the 5th and the 6th of March. And let me check to make sure I'm being correct about that.
Yes, I believe you're correct on that.
So Mr. Venezuela's action fundamentally contradicted what was claimed later, namely that there was enough there for involuntary termination. Let's say you're right, though. Let's say that what happened was this. Let's say that first there was a trial, and evidence was taken with regard to Mr. Venezuela, and only then he decided to voluntarily waive his rights. If that was so, then he voluntarily waived his rights in order to avoid an involuntary termination, and he ought to have the benefit of that bargain.
Is there a difference, Mr. Mack, between you're characterizing this as voluntarily waiving his rights and how the district court characterizes this as he wished to enter his admission to the petition?
I don't think there's a difference.
But the petition was for an involuntary termination of parental rights.
Yeah, but the colloquy with regard to the termination of his parental rights and his voluntarily giving up those rights occurs on pages 1 and 2 of the responsive brief, and those indicate that what he is being asked to do is to voluntarily terminate his rights, and the judge agrees to do that.
Well, I asked you earlier whether the record supported a voluntary termination, and you said no.
And I said no, but I wanted to point out page 3, where the judge says, I'm going to find that Mr. Villanueva knows what his rights are, that he's knowingly and voluntarily waiving his right to have the court make that decision, and I'm accepting his admission to at least one of the statutory grounds, and I find that he's provided a statutory basis for admission. So it's very clear, it seems to me, that that he is voluntarily terminating his parental rights. And if the judge was going to find that, no, that's insufficient, she should have said so. Now, your question again, Judge Klopaki.
Well, if it's a my question is, if it's a voluntary termination, are you contesting that there is an insufficient basis for a voluntary termination?
I am. But then if there was an insufficient basis for it and there was a finding that there was a voluntary termination, the court should have allowed him to contest the involuntary termination, and it didn't. So what it should have done was...
Did you ask the trial court to clarify what appears to be inconsistencies of a voluntary versus involuntary termination?
I didn't ask the district court to do anything because I wasn't the trial counsel.
Did the trial counsel ask that?
That I can't tell you. I'm sorry.
Well, have you reviewed all of the record?
Pardon me?
Have you reviewed all of the record in this case?
State in this case asked for a complete transcript. I didn't because I thought it was unnecessary given the contradiction involved.
But aren't you required to submit a complete transcript?
No.
You're not.
You know, I indicated that it was a partial transcript in my statement of the case and nobody challenged that.
Well, then you do realize that when you only submit a partial transcript that our review is quite limited in that case.
Accepting the voluntary termination, because that I have a complete transcript of.
Right, but if we don't have the complete record, we can't review. That limits our review, and case law does provide that we are then limited to decide whether the district court's conclusions are supported by its factual findings. So we do have limited review in this case then.
You have somewhat limited review, but you don't have limited review with respect to the fact that the court contradicted itself or that it should have allowed him to withdraw his agreement.
Ma'am, I just want to, Mr. Mack, if I may. If I may.
I'm sorry, I can't hear a darn thing.
If I may, Mr. Mack, just one additional question. If in your motion, whether it's under Rule 40 or just for to have your client withdraw from the admission to the petition, whether that's voluntary or involuntary, it strikes me, and I just want your response to this, that addressing this first to the district court, this argument that, well, there's confusion in the record from your perspective about whether this was voluntary or involuntary, and that because that has significance to your client if he has future children, that the district court needs to clarify that. That is exactly the sort of thing that the district court, if it had been brought to the district court's decision, could have addressed rather than bringing it first to our attention. Shouldn't we be tempted to say if you didn't raise that particular argument to the district court, you shouldn't have it on appeal?
I think, though, that the issue that was raised, the general issue, termination agreement lacked sufficient factual basis.
Involuntary or voluntary? Did you just misspeak?
Did I say involuntary?
I thought that's what I heard.
Okay, I'm saying that the voluntary petition and the colloquy between the court and counsel raises the issue because he says he wants to withdraw it, and that raises all the questions and the reasons why withdrawal should be given.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel for respondent, you'll have 15 minutes.
Do you want
Please.
So what you're seeing is that this was an admission of facts supporting an involuntary termination. It was not a voluntary termination proceeding.
So in other words, what you're saying, the use of the word voluntary is for the review of it, whether it was entered into intelligently, voluntarily, and with knowledge.
That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct. If someone wants to, as a side note, if someone wants to convert their involuntary termination into a voluntary, what will frequently happen or can happen is they'll file their own petition under 301.1A. Or they'll ask the county to amend its petition to add that as a different section, and then the admission will be to that. And depending on which factor or situation you're dealing with, whether it's 1A voluntary, what the court needs to address is whether it's for good cause. If it's under 1B, the involuntary, it's the statutory factors that we typically see on these cases. So here there was an admission on March 6th to an involuntary termination. So another important point is the procedural posture in this case. The judge's finding at number 9 says after close of the record. What happened here was the trial took place, went all the way through, the parties presented their evidence. Then he decided he wanted to change his mind and admit to the petition. And then that was the transcript we saw for March 6th where he provides that admission. And we're saying that that admission provides sufficient facts to support the termination. That's why I think there's confusion in the initial submission by appellant in talking about sufficiency of the findings, comparing that to Ms. Rogenbach's, because hers did go all the way through. It was contested. The judge reviewed that evidence, made findings based on that. I think this is also important. If, say, the court here says the findings were not, or the admissions were not sufficient to meet the requirements of law, this case then should be remanded back to court where the court left off, which was after the conclusion of trial, and the court would then have to decide whether it will take additional evidence, and then weigh the evidence that was presented at that time.
Mr. Baker, when we're considering the admissions, where would you point us to look at the admissions that support the conclusion that the county exercised reasonable efforts toward unification with regard to the father?
As far as what the judge reviewed within the admission?
Well, I mean, both within the factual admission made by the appellant here. I mean, it talks about, I think that I can clearly see where there's material there that relates to the neglect to, for example, the neglected to comply with the duties imposed upon the parent and the statutory factors, but that's a little different than the efforts made by the county.
And that's, I mean, I think that's the probably the interesting part, really, as the issue in this case is when a court accepts an admission to any TPR petition, what are the questions that they have to go through? The rule lays out some, they need to go through the statutory factors, but that's the best way to do it, and then get admissions to those factors. Almost like a plea and a crime. They go through the elements of it. And frankly, I wish I would have been down here. We're in November. This was in March. We're 8 months later. I wasn't able to find case law that was really clear on whether the admission itself needs to consider the other issues that the court considers in reasonable efforts and best interest.
Well, the question is there some evidence independent of that admission that supports those issues? Best interest?
I think that would be what was presented in trial, and that's where there's no transcript of what that was. It'd be the judge's findings in her order.
So,
well, you want us to affirm this matter, and yet you don't provide us with the transcript that you have that shows what the rest of the trial testimony is. Is that a fair statement?
No, it's not, from the standpoint that it's the county's responsibility to ask for a transcript on an issue that was not raised by the appellant. The appellant challenged one issue. Well, they challenged the sufficiency of the evidence based on what they thought was that the trial took place, and it did take place. The transcript they should have requested was the admission hearing, the March 6th transcript. And as far as that goes, you don't take into account what happened at trial. It's whether that admission is sufficient. This would be no different.
Well, it's pretty clear that admission is not sufficient because it doesn't speak at all to some questions such as the best interest of the child. So if this is going to be affirmed, it's going to have to be affirmed on the admissions plus whatever else is in the record. And yet you don't tell us what that record is. It seems to me you're asking for a reversal if you don't give us the record, it seems to me.
I don't think that's the case. The issue is what does the district court need to go through in the submission process?
Well, are you arguing that admission, as described on finding 9 on addendum 20, is sufficient to support all of the elements necessary to find termination or to conclude that there's a termination of parental rights appropriate?
Well, be that in the rest of the court's order, and there's nothing here challenging that court decision was wrong.
So, Mr. Baker, I'm looking at the court order at the addendum at page 37. With reasonable efforts, the court says that the county has provided reasonable efforts to reunify the children with the parent from whom they were removed. I was reading that as the mother, and to otherwise finalize permanency. So I have a concern about whether that is sufficient. Do we have to read to remove the children from the parent to being both parents or otherwise finalize permanency to include the father? Could you help me with that?
And I guess ultimately that's find clear case law on as far as when an admission takes place, what is the district court supposed to cover? Because, yeah, the reunification home was with the mother.
Well, the district court needs to cover whatever isn't covered by the admission. The admission is only limited to certain facts. It doesn't admit all the other requirements, all the other evidence that would be necessary to come to conclusions about the termination, does it?
I guess that's the issue. It's whether...
Well, not the issue. I'm reading number 9, the finding 9, and it talks about his imprisonment and his lack of contact with the children. What else does it say about best interests of the children or that termination is appropriate?
Well, it doesn't. And that's the issue I'm saying is, does the admission need to actually have questioning and statements from the parent that address that issue?
Or some other evidence. Is there other evidence that supports the required findings?
Addressing this because it wasn't someone, Mr. Villanueva here, was agreeing to forego the county to its from its burden and agree to have an involuntary termination.
So, Mr. Baker, let me ask you this. Since Mr. Villanueva is admitting to the petition, can we appropriately, do you think, look at the allegations in the petition for more specifics? Is that fair to do, much like we might some of the plea petition agreements in the criminal context? Because the petition does go into much more detail about contacts from the county and what the county did to try and meet with the appellant. And maybe Mr. Matt could address that for me as well.
No, I would think so. I mean, that's no different than, say, some civil cases where you have a default and it's relying on the pleadings and other documents submitted. It's a part of the record at that time. The parent is saying, yeah, I agree. The county has sufficient basis to involuntarily terminate. I agree. Now, it's whether any admission goes into as great a detail as what should be required, I think, is the real issue here. So, because once that was provided, then that's where the focus was, saying that this is what the real issue was. Well, what was being argued was whether there was sufficient evidence, and it seemed from the trial perspective. And I think I emphasize that too, because I see that there, also how this could have happened too, given the nature of what happened before. The day before, there was a fight in open court. That is quite an unusual situation. And people, judges too, all being human, sometimes forget to dot the I's, cross the T's. That could have been what happened here and what you view it as happening. But then the response is not, as they put in the reply brief, that they want to skip the trial. We should be back to where we were starting from, which is, all this evidence is before the court. I would think there would need to be some additional evidence because all terminations are based on at the time of trial, and we're 8 months later. Have situations changed, so kind of additional evidence on that.
So Mr. Baker, I want to follow up on Judge Justin's question in terms of it appears that there is some factual basis in the plea petition. And is it your position, if you look at page 39 of the addendum, and there's a colloquy between the court and appellant and his attorney, and about halfway through that page, the court says, it goes through all the various factors that finding that support for terminating parents' rights, and says, quote, the agency with regard to Mr. Villanueva has provided reasonable efforts to reunite or otherwise finalize permanence. And then his attorney makes a few comments, and then the court says, you understand that your admission is accepted as of today, regardless of who signs that contract. And appellant says, yes, I do, Your Honor. So is it your position that the factual basis that's in the plea petition and in addition to the district court specifically finding that reasonable efforts have been made, that that is sufficient to meet that statutory factor, given the unique facts of this case?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
I see my time's almost up, so if there's no other questions, I'll end the argument here. Thank you.
Thank you.
Termination proceedings. Oh, sorry. Termination proceedings are sometimes referred to as civil death. Because that's the case, I'd like to draw an analogy between criminal law and termination of parental rights to address Judge Dressen's question. Suppose this were a criminal case, and the defendant were asked how he pled, and suppose he said, I plead guilty. At that point, the court doesn't have the right to find him guilty unless it goes through the various factors that are set forth in the complaint. The mere fact that he says guilty to the complaint, therefore, doesn't give the government the right to import what was in the complaint. That's been decided for at least 20 years.
But this isn't a criminal case. This isn't a criminal case. This is a case that's governed by the juvenile rules. Is there anything in the juvenile rules? Is there anything in the juvenile rules that would authorize this truncated kind of procedure here?
There's nothing in the juvenile rules that would authorize the court to simply find for the factors if the person says, I agree to the complaint. In this case, all he says is, if he says it, I agree to the complaint. That doesn't tell us what he agrees to, and the judge agrees with that because someplace she says toward the bottom of the page, well, okay, I'll take a look at it and I'll find at least one of the factors. Well, you got to do that based upon the evidence and what the factors are, not just the fact that he agreed to it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mack. Thank you both, counsel, for your briefing and your arguments. We will be issuing an opinion on this case within the statutory time frame, which is a shortened one because it is a TPR proceeding. Thank you both.